This is Fatia, and you're listening to In the Neighborhood Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to In the Neighborhood Podcast. On today's episode, I have the founder of Crimson Bow Sickle Cell Initiative as a guest to discuss sickle cell disease. So on this episode, I'll be asking a series of questions such as, is sickle cell hereditary? Say, what are the diets like a sickle cell patient are supposed to take? Say, how are family members supposed to help when it comes to tending to a sickle cell patient? And so on. I would love you to listen till the end because of how passionate today's guest is. And I promise you, as a listener, at the end of today's episode, you will be an advocate for a better health care for, say, sickle cell patients in Nigeria. You can always check out the amazing work Crimson Bow is doing by going to their website, crimsonbowsci.org, if you would love to donate or volunteer. At this point, I would love my guest to please introduce himself.
Hi, everyone. My name is Greg. I'm a product manager, and I'm also the co-founder of Crimson Bow Sickle Cell Initiative, which is an NGO, a faith-based NGO that is focused on actually supporting people who live with sickle cell in Nigeria.
All right. Thank you very much, Greg, for making today happen. So to my first question here, what is SCD?
So SCD, sickle cell disease or sickle cell disorder, depending on what side of the divide you are on. Some people argue it's not a disease and it's a disorder, but, well, terminology. SCD is basically a condition where a human being has a malformed or a differently shaped red blood cell. So your regular red blood cells would be like a disc, you know, with a little, like an indentation in the middle, you know, flat disc like that with an indentation in the middle. And if that shape, you can imagine it in your head, is something that would easily move another shape. For example, if you were to have discs of the in a shape of a red blood cell and pour them down a pipe, they will go down pretty easily, you know, compared to what you have in sickle cell. In sickle cell, like the name connotes, the red blood cells are sickle in shape. So to have a very quick picture of what a sickle is like, just look at the mark anywhere. You see that star, so it's like a half moon of sort or a quarter moon. That's what a sickle is like. So imagine that shape now. So you have a handful of them and you want to pour them down a pipe, you can realize that they are most likely going to get stuck, you know, hanging on to each other on the way down. And that's exactly how sickle cell crisis happens. So that's indication of blood flow. And the fact that even the red blood cells in people who live with sickle cell are destroyed a lot faster than people who have normal red blood cells. So, for example, in the body of a regular person who doesn't have SCD, red blood cells are usually live for about 120 days. But in sickle cell, it's drastically reduced. We have red blood cells only survive 10 to 20 days. So that's a big jump, and that means that things are not optimal in the body. So basically, sickle cell is just the fact that the cells, the red blood cells, are sickle, and then that builds up all of the other things that surround it.
So I would like to ask again, yeah, like for a very young person, a baby, is it like something that is hereditary, or it's like?
Oh, so sickle cell is completely hereditary. So there's no way you get sickle cell if you don't get it from both your parents. So it's not even like one side of the family, like our bleeding or something like that. It's completely hereditary from both sides of the family tree. So it has to be father and mother coming together, giving you those genes that come together and leave the child that SS gene or SCG, or there are no other different types, you know, like thalassemia and all of that. But all of these are things we are beginning to learn now with the advancement of science. Before, it was just AS and things are a lot different because then you have a lot more investment in science, and now we know that there are different types of people and things like that. But yes, it's for both parents.
Okay, so in essence, we're supposed to be like more informed about our genotypes, and more especially, we should care about who we are going to be mating with.
Yes, you should care about it. There is of how to put it now. Dreams are for the obedience of fools and the obedience of wise men. So, but you need to go into every relationship with that knowledge, that concrete knowledge of the genotype of yourself and your partner, and the possibility of every permutation of your genotype appearing in it. So people hold this notion that it's only one out of four children. If I am S now and you are S and we get married. So they tell me that one out of four children will have SS, but that's not true. So what actually happens is that for every child that we have together, it's the cost of the coin, of the genetic coin, you know, that each conception has a 1 over 4 chance of being SS. So it has nothing to do with how many you have. The probability is on each conception. So you could actually have 4 children and all of them are SS. You could have 4 children and all of them are A. You could have 4 children and all of them are A. So you have nothing to do with the count that, this one is A, so the next one has to be. It's not going to work that way. So each conception holds that mutation.
But some people might argue, like, as parents, are there, like, food, like, your diet? Like, is there anything you can do to prevent it if you're already together with, say, another AS partner?
There's nothing that supports that. Nothing that proves that that is possible. So this is stuff that is happening at genetic level. Just, like, that you can determine the gender of the child that you have with your husband by eating a certain kind of food. It doesn't work. So things that determine the genetic level. Up to the other races where they have eye color and hair color, all those things that determine the genetic level. So the stem cell and the egg cell coming together, all of the genetic information is already coded into them. There is nothing you can do to change it from your own gene. Now, when the child is born, there are things you can do to maybe change it out from the stem cell and all of that kind of therapy. But there is nothing you as a parent can do during conception or during pregnancy that can do anything about it.
Oh, so you talked about the fact that when the child is born, then there are things you can do. So I want to ask now that how well has science been able to manage STD?
So our answer is really slow. Very slow. Because, you and I already knew how to get certain HIV, you know, grew up in Africa. All right, HIV is how that has been very well under wrap, very well under grip. We have figured it out. The world has figured it out. They've, you know, worked millions and billions of dollars in R&D and support from different organizations and nations standing up to ensure that the medications are free or subsidized. The same thing is something like what you call this thing now, tuberculosis. You know, the same thing, many other medical conditions like that, the kind of research that are going into COVID, vaccines coming out in record time, you know, different countries getting patents for the vaccines, those kinds of results, the kind of results we've got in cancer, the kind of results we've got in Alzheimer's, research that every day someone is coming out with something, you don't have that in SCD.
True.
Really slow. And that's because it is not a worldwide problem. It's a problem that is headquartered in Africa, actually headquartered in Nigeria. So it's not something that the rest of the world is going to do. So Big Pharma is not going to spend $200 million doing research on sickle cell because in the first place, the people you are trying to fix these drugs for can't afford it. So it's not good business for you to spend money and time making a drug for people who can't even pay for it. So one of the major drugs that a lot of sickle cell people use these days is hydroxyurea. And the history of that medication is that it was just a sort of a stumble upon solution. That drug was actually designed for leukemia. linear, like bone cancer and stuff, but they realize that the cost it helps to generate red cells quickly, which is red blood cells quickly. You know, the red cells are dying out in 10 to 20 days, right? So if there's any way to replenish quickly, it means the person's health outcomes will be better, right? I don't know if you understand what I'm saying. It's like you have a bucket that leaks. What you can do is fill it up really fast so that by the time it's leaking, you've already filled it to the top. Do you understand what I'm saying? So that's what we are doing with red cells. That's what that drug does. The drug helps you quickly produce infant red blood cells. Now, that drug was designed for something else. But because they saw that, if you can create red blood cells really fast, it's beneficial to sickle cell patients, that's how it became a drug for sickle cell patients.
Wow.
So it wasn't like somebody woke up and said, oh, I want to go and design this drug for sickle cell patients. Nobody's going to do that. The people that do that, before they hit that level, the first success of numbers that you will see with things like the COVID vaccine or drugs for HIV or other tuberculosis.
And when I actually read on STDs, I actually found out again that it's actually common amongst people in sub-Saharan Africa. So I'm wondering, with what you said again about the fact that the drug is going to be expensive and people would not be able to afford it, so is there anything like people in Africa can do for Africans? Like, is there anything they can do, or what do you suggest?
So let's take it from where we are right now. As I speak to you now, maybe the information I have has changed maybe yesterday or 2 weeks ago or 1 month ago. There is no dedicated inpatient sickle cell facility.
Oh.
Let me say that again. There is no hospital for sickle cell patients to come in at any time of the day and get admitted.
Wow.
The most that are available are clinics where you are only an outpatient, or you are admitted in a general hospital. I mean a hospital for everybody. So if you don't even have dedicated facilities, where is the research going to start from? Where is the funding going to start from? The sickle cell foundation in DR are always doesn't even 24 hours. You don't have inpatient facilities because it's not profitable to do these things. We can't even figure out ambulances. Like, okay, in case of a crisis, you need to rush into the hospital. I don't get them. You have to call an Uber and you have to have someone go with them. I mean, that's a situation where I had how much in my pocket? Over 30,000 naira cash in my pocket. That is only 2016, 2016. I was in a shitty situation. Like, I got off at the bus stop looking for someone, and I couldn't find my way. I was really, and I was in a crisis. And the taxi kept going and coming, but refused to give me a ride, even though I could afford it, because he was afraid that I might get in the car and then he becomes culpable, like he's now in trouble. That's what he does. So he picked me once my cousin arrived. He now finally picked both of us. And he was saying, I'm really sorry. I just don't want problems. That's why I didn't pick you safe. I saw you. He kept telling me, you'll go, you'll turn around, you'll pass, you'll keep watching me, but he refused to stop. That's why I don't ignore him, because I knew what was happening. Until my cousin arrived before he now picked up the road.
Sad.
So those are the realities on ground. So when you don't even have, I was going to the doctor and she told me, she said, because some of those is like one minor subject among all the genetic conditions. I was treated in a few topics in medical, just breeze over like that, and just know it, ignore it. And what we find that sickle cell patients is that every doctor you meet is ignorant about your situation, even the doctor. I mean, it was a different treatment out of South Africa, and I met a white doctor who had never heard of sickle cell before. Wow. And we have to be calling them to give our guidance on what to do. That one is still stomach that one. But you meet Nigerian doctors who are practicing here for years, and they don't know how to go about it. They think you are pre-acting. They think you are overestimating the situation. They think you're overreacting. Even nurses, so they think that they get. So it's a big deal. So there's no research, there's no education, there's no funding, there's no facility, there's nothing.
In that breath, yeah, I think I need to ask you now, like, what do you think people around you can do to help? Or, like, probably not people, maybe, like, okay, your close family members, what can they do? People in your immediate, say, circle, like, what do you think they can do to help, like, to lessen your burden? Like, what are the cues that you need? Like, okay, when I'm like this, this is what is wrong with me. Like, what are those things?
Okay, so that's the two things for the same that there is in my heart and there is their heart. Their heart is treat me like a human being, don't exclude me from stuff. So there are things that are like, oh no, don't bother, he can't, he can't, don't tell him, don't tell him along, ah, don't worry. So they exclude you and you begin to feel less human. And your parents follow you to school to ensure you don't do anything and you are treated differently. I remember practicing, you know, I used to sprint when I was in primary school. And my mom didn't know that I was sprinting for my house in school. And some of these things she showed me in school. I went to my class teacher and explained that this guy is a special, he's a special child with a bad health condition.
A little off topic, what house were you?
I was in the house and, you know, I was sprinting in the house and she told me, my teacher was in, you know, teacher was in houses in Senegal and you're taking the. She took me from blue house and put me in green house, in losing house. She took me from blue house to green house. But she took me on the bed and practiced for the test I was supposed to do. And I never did, and I was. The same thing happened to me, is like, it's too stressful. And the way people that they said was crazy. So we played like me and you facing each other, or two of us facing each other. What we did was we played going around the table. So like 10 guys are running around the table playing. So if you don't pass the ball, then you're out, right? So that was it. It filled out your two people. So my friend went there and she freaked out. Like, are you serious? How you think that canceled? Can't think tennis for me. So a lot of things like that. You are feeling off. You are less than everybody else. And then parents of, you know, your friends are like, why are you so small? Your friend is big. Why are you this? Why are you that? What's wrong with your eyes? What's wrong with your this? What's wrong? And, you know, people just need to be more empathetic and have emotional intelligence when they approach people that have medical conditions. Mm-hmm. Everyone has an idea. Everyone has advice. Everyone has, it's tiring. Another thing is, when you say there's a problem, then there is a problem. Don't feel like you are complaining too much, or everybody else is here, everybody's complaining. Why are you not complaining? I mean, one day I was at the school, and some guys were coming from campus, and they're coming towards the hostel, and they were on the corridor, and they're coming to my room, and these guys were arguing premiership. And I woke up from sleep from their shouts of like this and all that, and this. And from that sudden fact that I woke up from sleep, I just went into a crisis straight off.
Wow.
So, if I were to complain that you guys are making noise, like, what is wrong with you? Are you the only person there? I mean, it's a 10-man room forever. I mean, it's a 10-man room or 20-man room, you know, with all the squatters and stuff. How do you tell people not to shout about Arsenal and Chelsea? I mean, it's very important to them. Right? So, a lot of things, you just have to be considerate of the people that you are dealing with and try to be really careful. I had fantastic moments too. But some of them didn't just know, and that's because of the stigma. Like, you just want to speak up that you are a weakling, in quotes, so to speak. You know, like, oh, you're this and you're that. You don't have to explain to anybody why you take so many medications, why you don't do this and why you don't do that, and stuff like that. So, but on my side, I need to also step up my game. So, I know a lot of people who live in SCD, and a lot of them find it difficult coping with the daily challenges of regular work. 9 to 5, you rarely find SME people holding 9 to 5 jobs successfully, like constantly on the grind like everybody else. It's not you're not caught out for stuff like that. It will tell on you. Except you can go at a very relaxed pace. Your colleagues are chilled, you know, your bosses understand. Mm-hmm. Then one of the things that I always tell people is, yeah, whatever you can do, let people know so that you can go at a pace. So you don't push yourself too hard. Like, I mean, that happens to me a couple of times in out as an STD patient. Find the things that come to you naturally, and then you can excel. You know, one thing I decided a while ago was, if I have people like this, I'm not interested. I can't do all that jumping around, you know, standing somewhere all day, sitting down somewhere. No. If I can't do it for my desk at home to work when I want, I shut down the business because of that. Because I found myself going all over the world, up and down, trying to, you know, make clients happy. And I realized that this was not for me. It was starting to tell on my health.
Well, you realize, like, in all of this, it's like you are more privileged than the average Nigerian. So how then do people who are, like, very, say, from low-income families manage when it comes to their diet? And then I read again about them being in a particular temperature, like the environment they are in. How true is that, and is it really important?
Yes. So sickle cell crisis has a couple of triggers. I'll answer that first before going back to privilege.
Okay.
Triggers include malaria, dehydration, infection, stress. When I say stress, I mean every sort of stress, even emotional stress. It will land you in a hospital if you have emotional stress. You have a fight with your sibling, you have a fight with your boyfriend, you likely end yourself in the hospital if you don't manage it properly. Sudden changes of temperature, very cold, very hot, and all those things can trigger a crisis in sickle cell. Because all of these things are mentioned have a way of affecting the balance of your body. And so that could then trigger a crisis. And you start feeling this insane pain in part of your body, most likely a joint, or some bones like your back, lower back, knees, hips, elbows, shoulders, neck. You feel pain, it truck ran over you. Sometimes you have to ask yourself, are you sure you didn't hit your leg or something? Because the pain is so real, like it seems like it was blunt force trauma or something. That bad. It's so bad that you can't move that limb. Like, if you can find a place where you can catch your breath, you can't move that limb from that position, because when you do, the pain refreshes. It can be really terrible. And so, that's why when you get to the hospital, one of the things they want to do is, you know, they hydrate you, try to treat for malaria, try to prepare for infections, and then try to check up your appetite so you can try and eat something. Well, hydration is very important. So, dehydration is one of the things that you want to avoid. You want to avoid infections, you want to avoid malaria, you want to avoid altitude, you know, sudden changes, anything else, too hot or too cold might affect you. Emotional stress, physical stress, mental, any sort of stress will not affect you. It's most likely going to trigger a crisis. As a privilege, I think you have to do the best in where you are. I wasn't always, you know, comfortable. I have to be fair, I wasn't always comfortable. I was really struggling. You know, my family were struggling at some point, you know, doing financial decisions and stuff like that, blew back on everybody. But struggling, I tell people that when I was in university, I never took pay in school. Where I was young, you know, like taking cash, how, where, it never happened. I'll call my mom, then the next time I'll call my dad, then the next time I'll call my sister. That was why I wrote the pay to my left school. You know, so I wasn't always comfortable, but I had to just find a way to balance things, what at the level I could afford. So if I have $100 to eat, I know that I have to apply it in a certain way. I'm not just buy what everyone is buying, because those things are not good for me. And that's because health is a very important factor, in the sense that if you don't take care of your health, it's going not only going to degenerate, it's also going to knock out your income.
I think I quite
take that money that you don't have, you now have to spend it. That's why in this part of the world, almost everyone is just one health catastrophe away from being broke. Just one health problem that if everybody has to start running around. We've seen it everywhere. $2, apples, everybody. It happens, just one health catastrophe, and then shit hits the fan. So you need to think, at whatever level you are, you have a budget to eat. You don't have to have a fiscal budget or something you break down somewhere, but you know that this food is towards my, this money is towards my kitchen. You have to apply it in the best way for your health. Same thing happens with your medication. Same thing, I mean, water is cheap. Water is free in most places. You need to keep that hydration going. By the time you feel tested, it's already too late. You should have drunk water before you felt tested. As you sweat, as you talk, as you breathe, as you pee, you are losing water. So you need to drink water when we wake up in the morning, drink water before we take a shower, after you take a shower, before sex, after sex, before exercise, after exercise, everything like that. You need to ensure that you're drinking water. I mean, that's free, that's cheap, right? So those healthcare choices, those lifestyle choices are actually going to help you. It doesn't matter whether you earn a million naira or you earn 100K.
Wow. I think I'm learning more at this point. But then I want to ask you now, yeah, what do you have to say to parents, for example, who would not like to share or tell their children from a very young age that, okay, oh, they are suffering from the sickle cell disease, like they keep trying to hide it from the child in order not to bring them down. Would you rather, say, inform the child like you now that you already knew what was up, like from a very young age, or leave them, let them don't know?
Okay, so my case is quite peculiar in the sense that, I mean, I've met people that were already in university before they realized they were SS. The girls in the age of 40, they didn't know why. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
My case, one, I was one when they realized that, luckily for us, my parents could afford the kind of health care that would, you know, be able to identify something like that. I mean, it was about 30 years ago, right? So it wasn't everywhere that you need to identify unless it's someone who knows what he was doing, like an expert or something. So, but I realized going off that, I mean, every Sunday I have to take a particular medication called Daraprim. I realized that I have to take folic acid every day. I realized I was taking multivitamin every day. I realized I was taking Pico every day. And I never told any of my friends. So we are going to the hospital, like, who's you sick? I'm looking around, like, nobody's sick. The one they are taking to the hospital, I realize that, oh, why am I here? Doctor, I've been to that clinic. There's nothing wrong with me. As time went on, I began to realize that, okay, there was something wrong with me, especially when I started having crisis, you know, once in a while, and it really got worse in the university. But
oh, so your parents never had the talk with you?
Not directly, like, oh, sit down, but when the hospital, you realize that doctors are coming around, especially when you're sick and you see certain things and certain things, you start to piece two and two together, then you ask them a question, and they answer you, and then treat that done. But I think a better way would be to sit down and let the child know what they are up against. Hiding is not going to help them, because one day it's going to grow up, and you might not be there to protect them from it.
So do you get better as you grow older? Like, do patients get better as they grow older, or what's the case?
Your symptoms don't get better as you grow older. Your situation doesn't get better as you grow older. If your knowledge, your wisdom, your ability to manage yourself, including your body, and knowing that I can do X and I can do Y, that is what makes your outcomes better. You changing your diet in a certain way, you know, doing certain things because you now know that certain things are not good for you. That makes it better. So, as a child, you revealed and you don't want to take drugs anymore. I was so happy to go to university, like, I'm never taking the drugs. Nobody's going to tell me to take my drugs and things like that. But as you grow older, now I'm the one that needs to start medication myself. Nobody will tell me, right? So, as you grow older, begin to realize that I need to do X, I need to do Y. It's not that age heals sickle cell. Like I said, it's in your genetic makeup, it's at the foundation of how your body is built. And that's why it affects almost every part of your body and your life. Socially, economically, psychologically, medically, it affects you every day. And then a medical expert can only, if you know what you're doing, if you see a sickle cell patient, you can tell because they are, like I said, it's how your body is built from the bottom up. So age doesn't fix it. You know, the only things that can fix it are some certain procedures that, bone marrow transplant, you know, all those stem cell therapy, which are the best done when the child is very young. So the outcomes are better that way.
Thank you very much, Greg. I mean, this has been an enlightening session. But I want to ask him some couple of random questions here. So let me know if you're ready.
Yeah, I'm ready. Go for it.
All right. So, like, for every time you wanted to ask a girl out, you go like, oh, what's your genotype? Or how would you do it normally?
Yes, I did that. So, after a couple of conversations, one of the things I asked, you'd be surprised that even educated people will tell you blood group when you ask for. So, I didn't ask for genotype, I asked for blood group.
Okay.
First, I asked for blood group. And then, even educated people, like, of course, they will be like, they will tell you their genotype. And they are like, I'm telling you, what is your genotype? Like, oh, this one is blood. something or he's going to go any further or stuff like that, right? But after a while, I was told him, you know, like, I mean, my face was everywhere. I was talking about it on radio, I was on the TV, I was on paper. So I'll tell you, after I founded, co-founded Crimson Bowl, right? So I'll tell you straight up on the first date, like, until this is this. And they're like, oh, it is. They are like, no, I'm chill. Like, I mean, you know me, right? Which is another advice I give to tell patients, front load your value. Let people sense your value first. Let them see how great you are at whatever it is that matters to them the most about you. Before you begin to reveal that whole part of who, actually, I'm all of that gorgeous and smart and intelligent. I'm not making my money off the credit card. I'm peace and talented and stuff. I'm not going to just go on the ground and stay. And then you can help to think the fact that, hey, well, I'm not perfect. I should be a super human or just a happy person.
Okay, like today, you just want to be modest and humble.
Exactly. Everybody has their crimson light, and that's mine.
Alright. Okay, now, so what's your favorite food of all time? Like, that food that you cannot say no to?
How to be founded, damn, I know how.
Oh, like, I'm sold. Because Oha is my favorite soup.
Oha, or maybe white food is one of those two.
You know good stuff, oh. So, my final question, my final question.
I was trying to enjoy a lot when I started working, so I got to taste a lot.
Wow. Okay, this is going to inform my next question. Yeah, how many states have you traveled to in Nigeria?
26.
What? For real?
You have an airport. I'm most likely been there, and then some more.
Wow. This is interesting because I've always been a fan of traveling around, like Nigeria. You know, visiting the states. Yeah. That's just the insecurity, man. Like, it's very scary. Even from Ibadan to Lagos, I know how worried I get.
Yeah, I understand. There were certain places they didn't let me go to, you know, because of security. They didn't get security clearance to go to such places, but yeah.
Mm, that's cool. That's good to know. So lastly, who's your favorite artist of all time?
Has to be Jay-Z.
Oh, really?
Yeah, then a group will have to be Linkin Park.
Those are good. So yeah, I think at this point we'd have to wrap up. So anything you want to say to my listeners, like final word and blah blah blah.
So if you leave me sitting still, I need to understand that it's not a death sentence. Like, you live an amazing life. I battled a sickle cell complication for 19 years, and in that period I did everything. I went to school, I graduated, I got a job. All these places I said I traveled to 2016, I was battling the complication every day. I was in pain, but I kept going. You know, I did everything. I dated, I loved, I fell out of love, I was broken hearted, I made my first million naira. There is nothing you can't do like every regular person. You just have to know how you go about it. And if you don't live with sickle cell, but you know someone, or you love someone, or you've met someone who lives with sickle cell, educate yourself. Educate yourself. It really is powerful when you realize that this person knows, and this person is empathetic, and this person is actually useful and helpful if anything were to happen to me. Unlike you just asking dumb questions like, you like malaria? It's annoying when you say you love me or you care about me or you're in my space, and then you're just totally ignorant. Educate yourself. And anything you can do to support someone who lives in sickle cell, or you know, the whole fight and everything. Like, I personally have a clinic fund for the clinic I used to attend when I was battling my complication, because there are people there now who are facing the same things I face now. Just whatever you can do to put a spark in someone's day, light someone's candle, please do it.
Thank you very much, Greg, for doing this with me. I'm sure every one of us, we've learned one or two things. And hopefully, when I invite you again another time, you'd be here.
Sure, I'll be here. Please send me questions. If you have any questions for this episode, I'm happy to elaborate.
Oh, definitely. I'll definitely send them to you. So thank you very much. Have a good
day. Hello, and welcome to In the Neighborhood Podcast. On today's episode, I have the founder of Crimson Bowl Sickle Cell Initiative as a guest to discuss sickle cell disease. So on this episode, I'll be asking a series of questions such as, is sickle cell hereditary? Say, what are the diets like a sickle cell patient are supposed to take? Say, how are family members supposed to help when it comes to tending to a sickle cell patient, and so on. I would love you to listen till the end because of how passionate today's guest is. And I promise you, as a listener, at the end of today's episode, you will be an advocate for a better health care for, say, sickle cell patients in Nigeria. You can always check out the amazing work Crimson Bowl is doing by going to their website, crimsonbowlsci.org, if you would love to donate or volunteer. At this point, I would love my guest to please introduce himself. So a quick summary, yeah? Nigeria has the largest cases of SCD patients. Our healthcare system is deplorable, and nothing is going to be done about it if we as Nigerians or say Africans do not stand or come together and say, oh yes, we want to address this, you know, with the efficiency that, you know, people or scientists all over the world have attended to COVID-19. Yes. And we need to say, be more empathetic, like my guest said, and not go around giving advices, like unsolicited advices that, you know, patients basically did not ask you for. That is just what that means. And, you know, you should be cautious and know your genotype. And genotype, as we know it, is ASAA. For those who do not know, and your blood type is basically the O plus and the rest. So yeah, and you should know by now, after listening to today's episode, that sickle cell disease is very hereditary. So you definitely got it from your folks if you are a sickle cell patient. And what else? You guys should help me by, you know, sending me any messages or questions you have. My guest would be looking forward to answering any of your questions in relation to SCD. Please follow me on my Twitter. It is at In The Neighborhood Pod on Twitter, and it is at In The Neighborhood Podcast on Instagram. Thank you very much for listening, and I am still your host, Fatia. Have a great, great week ahead. Bye-bye. So a quick summary, yeah? Nigeria has the largest cases of SCD patients. Our healthcare system is deplorable, and nothing is going to be done about it if we as Nigerians or say Africans do not stand or come together and say, oh yes, we want to address this, you know, with the efficiency that, you know, people or scientists all over the world have attended to COVID-19. Yes. And we need to say, be more empathetic, like my guest said, and not go around giving advices, like unsolicited advices that, you know, patients basically did not ask you for. That is just what that means. And, you know, you should be cautious and know your genotype. And genotype, as we know it, is ASAA. For those who do not know, and your blood type is basically the O plus and the rest. So yeah, and you should know by now, after listening to today's episode, that sickle cell disease is very hereditary. So you definitely got it from your folks if you are a sickle cell patient. And what else? You guys should help me by, you know, sending me any messages or questions you have. My guest would be looking forward to answering any of your questions in relation to SCD. Please follow me on my Twitter. It is at In The Neighborhood Pod on Twitter, and it is at In The Neighborhood Podcast on Instagram. Thank you very much for listening, and I am still your host, Fatia. Have a great, great week ahead. Bye-bye.